Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast. And today's guest is the lovely Rachel Ann Hobbs. So Rachel is a dietitian and she's bloody good at what she does. If you don't already follow her on social media, then it's definitely worth the follow because the sort of information that she's putting out is brilliant and really helpful for people that, you know, need help with nutrition. She has a great holistic approach to life. And it's something I think that most of us can learn from. As always, if you feel that this episode or any of the episodes would help anyone, please share it with them. And if you think it's a good episode, let me know. Share it on your socials because it always helps and it always helps me know if I'm doing a good job. But without further ado, here's Rachel. Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Behind the Brain podcast. And today's guest is the lovely Rachel Ann Hobbs. Hey, Rachel, how are you?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me today.
No worries. How was your morning?
It was great, thanks. Just took the beagles out on a little stroll around the park.
Because you've recently bought, well, you don't buy them, do you? I suppose you've recently rescued another one, haven't you?
We've got two. So we've got Beatrice, who's around 18 months, and then we've got Winnie, who is probably around 6 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Were you, random question, are you looking to breed them?
No, absolutely not. Two is more than enough.
Especially beagles being the breed. So the reason why I've got Rachel on the podcast today, I love sort of her approach to Instagram, like your sort of holistic approach and sort of, I get this vibe that, how do I say this, that you're sort of really love the person you are. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like you're really, I'm not trying to say that from an egotistical point of view, of course not. I'm trying to say as like, I don't know how to word that, but I feel like you're very comfortable in your own skin. And I feel that you portray that message so well on Instagram. Have I made sense there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we say that we love ourselves, we instantly are like, oh, that does sound a bit like ego's talking. Because I think especially, well, for men as well, actually, like we are seen as actually talking about all the hardships that we have seems more relatable to people. Whereas if we say actually we are quite comfortable and we do feel very grateful, then you know, it can be hard for some people to relate to that. But yes, where I am now in my life feels very lovely for me.
Yeah, good. No, because you can, when I sort of read your captions and see sort of the things you're doing, I always actually look at that and I think, wow, that is like, it's quite a rarity in people in this day and age because we're always taught, aren't we, that selfish is a bad thing, but it obviously always comes down to the context, whereas actually if you look after number one, sometimes you radiate a better you, don't you? And everyone else around you sees that and gets a better you, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. But I think no one teaches us that.
No.
I think we are always taught, you know, put others before ourselves. And whereas actually if we fill ourselves up first, that can kind of radiate out to others as well.
Do you find, because obviously you're a dietitian, do you find that you have to get that message across to a lot of your clients?
Oh, absolutely. I think because the population that I work within is those experiencing chaotic eating, disordered eating, diagnosed eating disorders. And obviously there's a lot of different causes that they all kind of come together. But one of them is that, you know, at some point along the way, someone has learned to use food or restriction or binge eating, whatever their symptom is, as a way to cope with uncomfortable emotions and discomfort and stress and trauma. So actually just allowing themselves to have some compassion and understanding around that rather than just berating themselves is quite a big part of the work that we do together.
Okay. Would you say it's sort of like a self-medicate to a degree, but with food, as in other people use, say, alcohol, drugs and stuff like that, and food can be used as like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think any behaviour can be used as that. There are some, I think, behaviours that are more socially acceptable forms of coping mechanisms, like, you know, like going to the gym or exercise. We see that as, wow, that's amazing. But actually, what's the intention of that? or work. Like, there's a lot of people that utilize work as a maladaptive coping mechanism as well.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that you say that, because obviously I know this is your area, but I suppose I've never viewed it like that, especially the work thing. And now I think about that, there's actually definitely people I know that they just switch into work as that's like their getaway, should we say, from other problems that are going on in their lives.
Yeah, I think we've all got our vices. We've all learned at some point, actually, I need to do this to make myself instantaneously feel better. And it takes a lot to be like, okay, I'm ready just to, you know, look a bit deeper underneath this. If I don't do this thing that's going to take away this discomfort, what feelings and thoughts and beliefs am I going to start to experience that are perhaps unfamiliar?
Wow. So I obviously, the point of this podcast is to learn more about you, your background and sort of things that you're into. And I was on your Instagram the other day and I had a little scroll back and I didn't realise, well, I always knew you did the Iron Man, but I didn't realise that you had like all these other ways of exploring fitness. What got you into fitness?
All right, at the beginning, so we were, I say we because I'm an identical twin, so when I talk about childhood, yeah, we kind of were quite a mesh. We just did everything together.
Yeah.
So we were into every sport. Like, our mum put us into dance, gymnastics, so and we did every school club. So I think it was inherently something that was really enjoyable and felt like a form of play. And then it was just something that continued throughout. And then I think when I had my son when I was 18, I'd already, before I found out I was pregnant, I'd already signed up to do a marathon for charity.
Yeah.
So I did that I think he was about 4 months, 5 months old. And I think that really supported me to go through that transition to motherhood, to have something for me, to realize the benefits that exercise just had on so much more than the body. And then I just wanted to test my body, I guess, and see what it was capable of.
So when you did this marathon, was it one of those things of like, what can I do next?
No, I don't think it was actually. No, I think I was still kind of sitting on the edge of the fitness industry then. I'm trying to think whether I had become a personal trainer by that point.
But yeah, I didn't even know you was a personal trainer. There you go. I had this thought because I'm pretty sure my girlfriend Hannah said, yeah, Rachel used to be a personal trainer. I was like, well, I know that. But yeah, go on, sorry.
So personal training was the route I went down, and I did that in the year between having my son and going to university. Okay. Because I just wanted to be able to do something and learn a little bit more to support people that were in a similar position. And I still have a couple of long-term clients that I've been working with for maybe 5 years that I just have formed a very enjoyable professional relationship with.
Yeah.
So I still do a little bit of that. And then I don't think I got into doing the whole bikini thing maybe until my early 20s. And as much as that was an amazing learning experience, it's not something that I would ever do again. I don't think I was in the right mindset for it and perhaps did it for the wrong reasons. But I'm grateful for the experience.
Yeah, I think that's that. Bodybuilding is it's so unique, isn't it? And I do think that there's only a small percentage of people that it does suit them at the right time, essentially, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I just don't think I was very informed. I hadn't, you know, as much I was informed about what to do with my body, but I wasn't informed about the after effects of it.
What were those after effects, if you don't mind me asking?
So I think it did change my relationship with food temporarily, and it did negatively impact my relationship with my body. And I just think that's because anyone that is of low weight and has been in long-term low energy availability is going to start having cognitive changes. We know that from eating disorder research. So whether we're a low weight because we do experience an eating disorder, or whether because we've chosen to do a bodybuilding bikini contest, it doesn't really matter, we still get those malnutrition brain changes.
And do you find that you work with a lot of people like that now that are recovering from that, because it can take I've got a friend who's done it, and it's taken her roughly about 3 years for her to say find herself back into sort of a normal, well, what she deems normal to her, you know.
Yeah, and I think it does. I think it does take a long time, especially if we're not conscious of the impact, the negative impact.
Yeah.
And we just think this is kind of a new normal. And I think it does impact people that if they're competing and still within the fitness industry.
Yeah.
I think there is unfortunately still an expectation for us in the fitness industry to look a certain way.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, for sure. Did that experience sort of make you want to become a dietitian then? Was that part of that process? Or was you going to uni at the same time while you was being a PT and doing the bodybuilding?
I think I was in my fourth year actually when I did the bikini competition.
Okay.
So so to be a dietitian, it's 4 years. You do like a year and a half in like acute hospital settings as part of that training. So you have the fourth year was back doing the dissertation. So I think it was then. So I think my experience, both myself and my sister struggled with different forms of disordered eating and being low weight in our teenage years. And I think the recovery from that was probably what prompted me to want to be a dietitian in the first place.
Really? I have noticed, because I sort of speak to other, say, therapists and in different realms, and I do find that they do have a background of experience in something themselves, and it sort of, I suppose, it inspires them. I've made this change, I know I can help more people, which is a brilliant thing, of course. What I was going to say, so you've done your bodybuilding, what was the next, like, target that for that then? What was the next goal that you wanted to achieve?
So I think in terms of sports, I think I'd realised that actually that bodybuilding side of things just wasn't for me. I didn't really enjoy being on stage. I didn't enjoy the kind of the tanning, anything like that. And then I think it just, but I loved training still. So I think it just so happened that as I was increasing my intake and doing some strength training, my strength just massively increased and my power massively increased as I was kind of reading. And then there just so happened to be someone in my gym that just started going, that was on the GB powerlifting like club, who just basically scouted me and then invited me to the training sessions. And then I got into powerlifting.
Wow, because that's, even though they're quite similar in as a discipline to a degree, but you've gone from something that's aesthetic to now performance. Was that a much better buy-in from a training point for you? Because you could obviously, you're not judging yourself on how you look. It's more about performance and you can see these numbers. Did you find that was, this suits me better, actually. I actually enjoy this more.
Yeah, massively. And I still think I was very much, I'm just thinking how long ago that was. It was probably about 8 years ago. I was still very much in that mindset of it. I mean, I still felt like it took over my life. And I think that to be good, to be very, very good at anything, that is probably the mindset that you have to have. Whereas now I had to take a much more balanced approach, but then I'm probably not very, very good at anything. So, it definitely suited my mindset a lot more. Like, I liked seeing the numbers go up. It gave me objective targets where I just don't think you ever had that within the aesthetic industry.
No, of course not, because I suppose with that, you've got judges, haven't you? And you've got their biases. Yeah. And it's, whereas in a competition with powerlifting, it's, you've got to hit a 1RM and that's it. And obviously the form has got to be to their standard. But yeah, no, I can see how you've transferred into that and how that's actually, this is better. So did you do any competitions?
I did, yeah, I did loads actually. And I actually really enjoyed the experience, and the team that we were with was so supportive. I think we went to Czech Republic for Euros. So I did, I think I broke the British record, I think in my second year, on the squat and the deadlift. And then I won the gold at the Europeans.
Wow, I didn't even know. Yeah, another thing, I didn't even know.
That was, an amazing, amazing experience. I'm very grateful for.
So that was it. But was this a thing? Did you have that? Did you step back and realize, God, this is another event, well, sort of a sport that's taken over your life?
Yeah, a little bit. I think the main reason why I stopped powerlifting was because I tore my hamstring, and then I never rehabbed it quite enough, because whenever then I went back to squat, it would niggle again. Yeah. And then I think I just lost a bit of confidence in it. And then actually taking that step back was probably what I needed to just review my relationship with exercise in that way.
Mm. And how old was your boy at this time?
He must have been about 5, I reckon.
Oh, wow. What an inspirational person to have in his life doing, like achieving all those things over those across those years.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure do they still remember at that age? It must have some impact in the subconscious, but I don't remember when I was 5.
I don't know. I suppose, don't you remember things as there's an emotional attachment to it better?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. So
maybe he might remember it if he sees a photo and go, maybe I remember that. Yeah. So then I imagine, is this when you, well, I don't know if you was doing this whilst power, I imagine you didn't do this whilst powerlifting, so it probably would have a negative impact on it. Is this where after you started getting into running? Because this is, for me, this is your, in my eyes, sorry, this is your, the best achievement for, I think anyway.
The best sporting achievement. So I was into running pre my son, before I was 18. Mm. And then I think I did it ad hoc. That was when I got into it. It was always an easy thing to do, because you don't have to go anywhere. You can just literally just go around the block.
It's free, isn't it?
It's free, and it's also really, and something that I've learned later, it's a form of bilateral stimulation.
Yeah.
So it engages like both sides of the brain, and is really quite calming, regulating. So I think I just really enjoyed that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, because it's definitely something I've always done like one run a week, like just like a Billy basic cardio, keep the aerobic base there, because I know how good it is. But now I've just started taking it up a gear, and I forgot how good it is, how you can tap into certain, so I suppose, dare I say, dark places. Obviously depends how hard you push yourself, but you just don't get that when you're sort of lifting weights or anything like that. Do that same thing that you can get with running, when you're, you know, your heart rate's like 190 and you're having all these thoughts, you just don't get that with weightlifting.
No, I completely agree, and it's probably something to do with being outside in nature as well.
Yeah, because that's something that I suppose, and this is something I noticed with yourself, like you do, say, your gardening, and you do, like, dare I call it, play, like activities, and it's like you're tapping into that, those things. As we get older, we move away from that, don't we? We move away from being outside, play, these activities and stuff like that, whereas actually we need to keep those things in our lives, don't we?
I think it's just because we're taught, just growing up, you know, you've got to be productive, you've got to achieve things, and that, like, inner child part of us just gets pushed down.
Yeah, you can't crawl anymore.
Yeah, just, I think, you know, actually, for me, it was like an active, conscious decision. Like, this is something I want to explore. And at first of all, I was like, but this isn't productive, I'm not achieving anything by doing this. And then, like, it's like you have to remind yourself, yeah, that's the point, like, this is just to have fun. So it's a lot of, you know, what we talk about in my work is like, how have you had fun today, like, what how have you explored creativity or playfulness?
That's quite a good thing to think, because I sometimes definitely feel guilty of, like, I'll have like a tick list each at the beginning of the week, and if I finish that early, and I'll be like, what do I do now? And I sort of feel guilty. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm not doing work, and I know that that's not good. I know that. And I'm like, God, I feel guilty for not doing anything. Anyway, sorry. So back on to the big event, Ironman. So that's such an achievement. Like, what? So you're doing your running, you've done bodybuilding, powerlifting. What has stimulated this sort of thought of, right, let's do this horrendous thing?
It was, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Okay.
And I think you feel quite helpless. When you're just witnessing someone going through that, and his from diagnosis to when he transitioned was, it was less than 2 years, so it was quite a short time period. Yeah. And we'd spoken about things, just like as a challenge. He just said, you know, do something that will raise money for like the hospice and the charities that supported him. And I just thought, like, why not do an Ironman? It's sport had always been my like comfort zone, but this was just not just something else. So I think that was my, yeah, that was my motivating factor. And I think it really helped me through grief as well.
Yeah.
It helped me manage and process different emotions. And I'd never really cycled or swam, so they were both like new things that I had to learn. So it was, yeah, an amazing, amazing experience.
Would you do it again?
When I finished, I would say, have said absolutely not, but never say never.
Upon reflection now, those events, yeah, it's always rubbish whilst doing it. And but it's that, it's enjoying that process, isn't it? Like you said, that obviously helps you deal with grief. Yeah. And then when you do that event, you're like, oh, 2 months later, it's not actually that bad. I could do that again.
Absolutely. But I think anything like endurance is, it's the time, isn't it? Like you have to commit to the hours on the bike and the hours on the road and in the pool. And if you don't have that availability and that luxury, then it's a stress.
Yeah, I suppose that's what stops a lot of people scratching those itches of taking up an endurance sport.
Yeah.
So what's your fitness endeavours now? How do you, because obviously you were saying about balance earlier, how do you do, what do you do now?
So at the moment I am, what am I, 7.5 months pregnant. So my fitness routine has changed slightly. But at the moment I'll be trying to do like 5 sessions a week, but it will be like completely listening to my body. So that might be like an at-home circuit. It might be yoga. It might be going for like a gentle run, which is starting to feel a bit uncomfortable. Or it could be like doing weight sessions at the gym.
Really? So it's just literally auto-regulate what you want to do and how you feel.
Yeah. And to be honest, I would say that's how I've been training for maybe, it was before lockdown. So gosh, when was that? Two years ago?
I don't know about that blip.
Yeah. So it was pre that that I'd started doing that rather than like following a plan, and which are great if you've got fitness goals, but mine was kind of just, I just wanted to, yeah, maintenance, just enjoy life.
Oh, good. What, and have you got, have you, is there any itches that you feel that you need to scratch at the moment, or is it, are you just, are you really happy with what's going on? Which is a good, great place to be, as even though some people would say, oh, that's complacent, it's not, like, I think it's very good to have that perspective at times, you know.
No, there's literally,
I thought you were gonna say something then. I thought you were gonna say, 2022 I'm gonna do.
There's nothing, there's nothing that I can, nothing that's kind of driving me to want to do it. I'm very content.
Oh, brilliant. So also as well, I know that I've seen this through posts and that. I'd like to touch on what you do with the military as well.
Yeah, fab. So after I did my first degree, I went to do with the International Olympic Committee to study sports-specific nutrition for 2 years. And then I actually work, it's a company called TAS, so it's the Talented Athlete Support Scheme, and they we have a center in Aldershot with the army on one of the sport, on one of the sports bases. And there is like basically an MDT team, so myself as a nutritionist, we've got an S&C coach, physio, sports psychologist, lifestyle advisor, and the athletes that are perceived to have podium potential, so in the Commonwealth Games, Olympic Games, we actually take them out of their ranks, and they're trained as full-time athletes, so they have access to the whole team.
Is this what we call tracksuit soldier?
Might be.
Yeah.
But to be able to maintain that status, they have to hit certain parameters.
Okay, yeah. That was one of the... so obviously I served in the Marines, and that was one thing I always thought the army was so good at. It was like pushing, if someone has potential, they push them very well. As well, we had lads in the Marines that were absolutely brilliant at sport, and could be whatever you wanted them to be, well, whatever they desire to be, but they wouldn't, no, you're still serving, you're still going on exercise, you're still going to Afghanistan. And it's like one of those things, you know, but I've always had massive respect for the army of being like that with like, God, this guy is so talented. We need to drive him to what he's born to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the pathway that we try and take the athletes is that they move from us to like, for example, GB boxing.
Yeah.
That's where we want them to go.
And have you worked with any people that have been in the recent Olympics or any Olympics at all?
Yes, I have. I'm just thinking from a confidentiality perspective.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Share that or not.
Oh, yeah, wow. That's cool. What an achievement though, and what a bit of exposure that's been for you. Like, not, it's not exposed you, oh, I've done this, but like what an environment to be in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And everyone's so motivated and dedicated and like athlete focused. It's just a really, positive environment.
Do you do much? Because I know you're saying obviously about the people you work with. Do you do any other stuff with sports wise? Like, do you have clients like that? I know you can't obviously say who they are.
No. So I used to do a lot more now, but I think the only sports private work I would do now is if an individual is also experiencing distressing eating behaviours and they also want to continue their sport. So things like relative energy deficiency in sport would come up quite a lot, or hypothalamic amenorrhea with athletes. So that would be, I come from a more clinical perspective.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So, wow, what a lifeline that you've gone through when it comes to the things you've exposed yourself to, but been exposed to from a work point. And I obviously saw, I noticed that you did a CBT recently, like a course on that. And how has that helped? Because it's nothing really, mental health first aid course.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And that was when I was working with the person, they said that's the probably one of the best well-researched therapy methods that is like great with results. How has that gone well with your own approach with the clients that you work with?
Yeah, so I started exploring different kind of therapeutic modalities as just a CPD maybe 5 years ago, because we study some aspects of kind of nutritional counselling and dietetic therapy, but I just wanted to know a little bit more and be able to support my clients in a different way. So I started, I think I did advanced CBT and behavioural, well, they call them addictions. I don't really like that term.
Oh, no, that's what I mean.
Inner child therapy, tantra. And then I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to study to be a psychotherapist just to learn it all. So I'm actually in my second year. So first year we did things like hypnotherapy. Now we've done psychodynamic, humanistic, and redoing CBT, which is like a type of behaviorism. And it works well for a lot of individuals because it's it can be quite a quicker paced therapy than something like psychodynamic, where it takes a little bit longer. So if someone only has, for example, 6 sessions, for whatever reasons, then they can start to see active change.
Yeah.
I was going to just say, but like I think a lot of individual practitioners that work in my area, I take a really pluralistic approach. So I wouldn't say I do this method from a dietetic approach either for everyone. Like, I think very important that we meet the individual where they're at.
Yeah, everyone's so unique, aren't they, in their thought processes. I can't say that word, I don't remember. Psycho, what do you say?
Psychodynamic?
Yeah, what does that mean?
So basically they're different, just different modalities of therapy. So psychodynamic, you'd be looking at some therapists or psychologists like Freud, where we have a look how the unconscious and if it impacts the conscious and trying to bring some of those beliefs up that were developed in childhood.
Okay.
Whereas humanistic, you're a little bit more like you're walking with the client, you're allowing, you know, they take the lead, they're the leader of their experience and their self-healing, and you're there to kind of just handhold.
Right, okay. Oh, all right, so it's sort of like it's open-ended questions, and you get them to sort of, I suppose when we're coaching, all clients have the answers, don't they, to a lot of their, dare we say, issues. It's just showing them that you're the guider, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of clients and a lot of people just need that trustworthy person. So whether that's a coach, personal trainer, a nutritionist, whoever it is, that can just hear them and just validate their experience.
With that being said, this actually leads well into something I was going to ask. Because I don't feel that you guys, I always feel in this sort of fitness realm, when a lot of people have issues, the person they should always go and see is a dietitian. So if anyone's listening, like, I suppose, what do you do that's different? I know, because obviously I refer people and stuff like that, but I always, you know, I'm quite open with people. If they come to me and I don't feel that I'm the right fit for them, I will happily send them to who I suit. But I suppose, God, how do I ask this? What do you do? Because I think dietitians need more exposure and need more light. They are the right person for 99% of the people who go and work for a personal trainer. Actually, I think you need a dietitian. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would, again, to make it more complicated, say that even in dietetics, we have so many different like specialist interests. So, for example, if someone came to me and was having chemotherapy and wanted support, that's not my area of expertise. So I would refer onwards.
Yeah.
But in principle, a dietitian is a protected title. So we have had to gone through university and we have had to keep up with our career professional development and stick to our healthcare professional council's guidelines. But where I kind of sit in is working with individuals that are experiencing eating disorders or disordered eating.
Okay, right. Okay, so if someone was experiencing that, how would they, what's the best way that they could reach out to a dietitian instead of going to a bloody personal trainer?
So, I would go to either the BEAT website or the British Dietetic Association website and just search on there, or the Healthcare Professions Council website. They could also, I mean, the first port of call if anyone's struggling would always be the GP, because they can refer them inwards. And it just depends on where you're living, the waiting times, whether it's eating services someone would need or whether they'd need to see like an acute dietitian in hospital. But if someone did have capacity to go privately, then it would be the BEAT or the BDA website.
Okay, perfect. And what future endeavours do you have in your career?
Oh, interesting. So I'm releasing a course. It's called A Journey to Fullness, and it's basically like it's an online program that sits between self-help and one-to-one therapy.
Please promote everything you need to on this podcast. I don't care, trust me, just because the more people that work with people like yourselves, the better, because then they're getting the right information from the right person. So yeah, plug away.
so that is kind of what I wanted to release when I was on maternity leave, so people could still engage in a way that if they wanted to kind of support their eating behaviors during this time. But I think I'm much more when I come back from maternity leave, I'm very keen to explore that community sense. So yeah, perhaps to do some more like immersive experiences, retreats, workshops, that type of thing, is where I feel like I would like to go, and where I feel like I'd be able to give the most to other individuals as well. Because I think as much as one-to-one work is hugely beneficial, it's not always accessible for everyone.
No.
And actually, I think there is a huge amount that can be gained from working in more like a guided peer support network. So to do actually in person with groups, that kind of retreat immersion experience is kind of, I think, where I'll be going.
Yeah, no, that'd be brilliant, because I know that those sorts of things go on with, not to bash anyone, but usually sometimes the wrong people are running those bloody things. So with yourself, yeah, I know that's going to be a much more ethical way of doing it, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think even though we say like that maybe some individuals don't have the qualifications, I think that I think people can still gain a huge amount from that, just that sense of community. And I think everyone's heart is always in the right place.
Yes.
You know, it's just if they've lost a little bit of direction. Which happens to us all at times.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Everyone usually does have a good, you know, like a good...
They want to do a great
intention, but sometimes it's the bloody wrong information or what they're teaching might not be the best for that person in front of them. So if people want to find you, I'll obviously let people know as well, but where would they find you and how do they contact Rachel Ann Hobbs if they want to work with someone like yourself?
So I would just go to my website, which is rachelannhobbs.com, and there's meditations, blogs, things like that on there, just to explore if someone wasn't quite sure whether the way I work would be right for them.
Okay, awesome. So Rachel, thank you for coming on. Thank you for giving me insight into some of the things you've achieved and what you're currently doing and what you're going to be doing in the future.
Well, no, thank you ever so much for inviting me.
Oh, say that again, sorry. I think I accidentally...
Thank you ever so much for inviting me.
Sorry. Anyway, guys, basically what I just did, because I received an email, I turned off my bloody speaker and I think it just muted Rachel. I don't know what's going on. I'm so sorry. What a way to end the conversation. Right. Anyway, thank you, Rachel.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.